Right, good morning. It's great to actually listen to Ellie and Mike and their stories about what happened to them when they met Jesus. Also just want to say a warm welcome to families and friends. I hope you feel very much part of what's going on, and it's great that you're here to support Michael and Ellie. So they were modern day stories of what happens when people meet Jesus. But on the first Sunday of every month, we're doing a whole series on what happens when people met Jesus. And today we're looking at what happened when Levi met Jesus, which for those of you now might think slightly ironic that I'm kind of speaking on that subject, given my second name. So it's Mark 2, beginning at verse 13. Once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. A large crowd came to him, and he began to teach them. As he walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," Jesus told him. And Levi got up, and he followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were eating with him and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. When the teachers of the law, who were Pharisees, saw him eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they asked his disciples, "Why does he eat with sinners and tax collectors?" Well, Jesus heard this, and he said to them, "It's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but I've come to call sinners." Sometimes I think, a number of times it says, when Jesus heard this, I sometimes think he must have some amazing ears and can hear through walls and hear what people are talking about kind of miles away. But anyway, what was Jesus up to? Just what did he think he was playing at when he told Levi to come and follow him? What did he think he was doing? What was going through his head when he said, "Yep, I'm going to come and have dinner at your house"? What made him do what he did, and what made him say what he said? At one level, it's a very simple story of a person meeting somebody, being invited around their house and having a nice slap-up meal. But that's on the surface. There's more of this encounter that is beneath the surface. One of the biggest films of a long time ago was Gladiator. Many of you have probably seen it. Most of you have probably heard it. Some of you probably weren't even born when it was shown. But Gladiator was this big, epic movie. And it starts with the Emperor of Rome calling his trusted servant Maximus to him. And he says basically this: "I've not got long to live, and I don't think a bundle on my particular son. So Maximus, I want you to be the emperor, the protector of Rome when I die. You're my best military commander, and it's going to fall to you to be the protector of Rome." As you can imagine, this does not go down very well with the emperor's son, who's called Commodus. He gets to hear about this, so he plots. Not only does he plot, he actually kills his dad, which is not something I would recommend any young person to do. So he kills his dad, and then he says, "Right, and do away with Maximus." But Maximus is taken out of the city, becomes a slave, becomes a gladiator, and eventually becomes one of the best gladiators. So he goes back to Rome into the Colosseum, and that's where he meets the emperor's son for the first time. So let's see what happens when Maximus meets Commodus in the Colosseum.
Rise. Rise. Your fame is well deserved, Spaniard. I don't think there's ever been a gladiator to match you.
For this young man,
he insists you are Hector reborn.
What's it, Hercules?
Why doesn't the hero reveal himself and tell us all your real name? You do have a name.
My name is Gladiator.
How dare you show your back to me? Slave! You will remove your helmet and tell me your name.
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the armies of the north, general of the Felix Legions, loyal servant to the true emperor, Marcus Aurelius. Father to a murdered son, husband to a murdered wife, and I will have my vengeance in this life or the next.
So the emperor's son is absolutely, totally offended when the gladiator turns his back on him. That was an offense worthy of death. So who was this man? Who was this person who dared to stand against the emperor and all of the power of Rome? And then, of course, when Maximus turns round, it all becomes clear, doesn't it? This gladiator has every right to turn his back on Commodus. He has every right to flaunt the authority at the time. And when he turns around, there's this big gasp from the Colosseum that says, right, now we know who this man is. Now we know why he can say the things that he says and do the things that he does. He does have every right to do such thing. And they turn on the emperor's son. Well, in Mark chapter 2, there's a whole series, if you like, of Maximus and Commodus events with Jesus and the religious leaders. And this was one of them. Jesus does some stuff in Mark chapter 2 and says some words that to the people that are listening are absolutely outrageous. And for the people who don't know him, and for the religious leaders who think that they hold the power, who don't know him, they think this is outrageous stuff. And they ask the question, what gives him the right? What gives Jesus the right to do the stuff that he does and say the things that he says? What gives Jesus the right even to talk to Levi, who is collecting the taxes? What gives Jesus the right to go to the house and eat meals with other people who they wouldn't even be said dead with, just in within a couple of miles? What gives Jesus the right to challenge the religious leaders and do that? Well, when Jesus says the things that he says, and when he does the things that he does, and when we read of his life, then those that are listening to him gasp just as loudly as the guys in the Colosseum in that film, because they realize who Jesus is. They realize he's the Son of God, and he has every right to do the stuff that he does and to say the things that he says. So what about Levi? Well, Levi was a tax collector. And those words to anybody reading this passage at that time, they would stir up feelings of fear and hatred. Being a tax collector was not a good thing to do. He was not just a tax collector, he was collecting taxes for the oppressors of Rome. And he was also probably one of the most wealthiest tax collectors in the time. His toll booth was on a road from Damascus to the Mediterranean Sea, an absolutely major transport route. So he was rich, stinking rich. He was also rich because, like all tax collectors of that time, he skimmed the stuff off the top. He took some of the taxes for his own self. It was a bit like today if you set up a toll booth just outside Swindon on the M4, and every time everybody walked past and came back, they had to hand over money, and the person on the toll booth was actually keeping some of that money for themselves. But Levi not only did that, by doing that, he was not respected at all. because he was a Jew working for the oppressors and he was skimming money off for his own people. He was one of the most unloved in society. So it's not surprising that he was sharing the table with adulterers, with thieves, with prostitutes and everybody else who was on the edge of society, everybody else that people wouldn't talk to. So for them, for Jesus to notice Levi was bad enough. To call him to follow him was even worse. To go and eat a meal at his home with his friends was just totally unacceptable for those who thought they knew how the world should work. So they had a major hissy fit. So in answering this question of the religious leaders, Jesus said this: "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but the sinners." That doesn't make sense, does it? Surely Jesus came for everyone. That's what we stand up here and say. Jesus came for you, came for me. Jesus is there for everyone, didn't he? Well, of course he did. But his point is this. Those people, those religious leaders who counted themselves righteous, who thought they had everything together and everything was right with God, and they knew how the world worked, and they set their laws, and they lived by their laws, they weren't in a position to even recognize that they needed help. They didn't see that they needed to say sorry. They didn't see that they were broken people or to turn their life around. But everyone else, well, we can see what's missing from our life. And we can see that Jesus meets that need. You see, Jesus did come for everyone. But here's the thing, you and I, we need to know we're a broken people. We need to know that we need Jesus. We don't have to be perfect to follow Jesus. In fact, thinking you're perfect and trying to be perfect just gets in the way of following him and knowing him. And that's the great thing. He loves us in our brokenness and in our imperfection. So it makes no difference who you are, how old you are, what job you have, or what you've done or not done in your life. The only qualification for coming to Jesus and having a relationship with him is to admit that we're not perfect and we just can't make it through this life on our own. And that is the answer. Jesus is the answer. He is the Son of God. So just finally, so what? So what happened to Levi? What happened after this meal? Well, when Jesus said, follow him, he didn't mean just hang around in the distance and watch what I'm doing. He didn't mean just get some of the starry glow that comes from being with me. When he said follow him, he meant give up your living. Stop being a tax collector. Stop being somebody that skims money off the top. Give up your way of life. Give up your way of thinking and the way you do things and live a new life in obedience to me. So Levi gave up his wealthy life as a tax collector and he became a disciple of Jesus. What happened to him? Well, he took on the name Matthew and he wrote one of the Gospels that in turn show us the way to follow Jesus and what it is to know him.